veteran
and his emotional support Canadian
scream into the void about the Mormon Church. If you want to reach us, we are on Instagram at NotSoPeterPriesthood.
And you can email us at NotSoPeterPriesthood@gmail.com.
Thanks for joining us. Enjoy!
Bye!
We're going to start out this podcast episode with some deep breathing.
Into the belly.
Yeah. Some calming, centered breaths.
Okay.
I say this all the time, but, you know, this one's not going to be that bad. But it might bring up some stuff.
I don't believe you. Who knows? All right. I already have therapy later today, so I'll be fine.
You're fine. And tell your therapist hello for me, because I
hope. Oh, I know. Like, how is Jake? And I'll be like, still torturing me, so, you know, it's all good.
I don't know if you noticed my shirt.
I did. Iconic. I love it.
It says iconic and has the Golden Girls on it.
I have a new shirt.
Rainbow on it.
It's obviously not as cool as yours.
It's still great, though.
It's a very dusty shirt, hey?
It's black and, you know.
It's black and it has a skeleton hand holding flowers and a butterfly. Yeah. So it's very dusty.
Our two personalities, dead, like, right?
Anything that, like, is the two of us, I always just, like, put Wednesday Adams and eat it, because it's just,
yeah,
I just love it so much. Isn't that, I think, my profile picture on our Fable?
On our buddy reading, yep.
Yeah, I'm definitely Wednesday Adams. So yep. Funny.
Well, today's is going to be a lot of stuff, so we have a lot to cover, so we're going to get right into it.
Okay.
Brace yourself. It's not that bad, Dusty.
I've been hurt before, Jake.
We're going to talk about the history of Pride.
Oh, yay, yes. Yeah. Woo, woo. I know some, but not all.
Yeah. And this is, like, not an extensive, I mean, it's as extensive as I could get it, but I'm pretty sure there's stuff I'm probably missing. So, listeners, if there's stuff that I missed during all this, let me know. Let us know. You can email us or reach out on Instagram.
In a very kind way, please.
Yeah, please be kind. But also, you know, Corrections Corner, we're okay with that. So, also, if there's, like, details that I miss on some of these, like, let us know. But we're going to start in 1958 with Cooper Donuts. After nearby bars closed, a 24-hour Main Street donut cafe became the site of a large riot one morning in May 1958. Two cops, ostensibly checking ID, a routine harassment, arbitrarily picked up two hustlers, two queens, and a young man just cruising and let them out. That's from novelist and one of the hustlers, John Ritchie, said in his book, City of Night. So this is all from, I got a lot of my information from history.com. The situation quickly devolved as angry bystanders began throwing debris and items from Cooper at the cops, who eventually retreated into their car. Disobedience turned into a riot, and soon enough police backup arrived. The officers blocked part of Main Street for the night and arrested several of the rioters. There's been some confusion about the actual location of the 1958 brawl, but Ritchie, I don't know if I'm saying it right, but R-E-C-H-Y, clarified in a 2021 interview in The Land. I don't know. Is that a magazine? I don't know. There was no riot at Cooper's. It was actually another donut shop, but at that time, people called every donut shop in the city Cooper's because there were so many. This one, particular one on Main Street, is gone now. Didn't write down where that actually is. Where's Cooper Donuts? Sorry. So professional. It's in LA. Let's see, make sure. Yes, in LA. Okay. Whew. All right. Google for the win. All right. so that was kind of one of the first ones that we know of. I'm sure there were other ones that have happened. A lot of people think that I think part of the reason why I want to talk about this is a lot of people think that Stonewall was the first.
Yeah. I think it was just because it was in New York City, and New York City is like the center of the universe. If you've ever read a book, that's where they all take place, don't they?
Yeah, and all the aliens invade New York City because that's where they want to. And honestly, New York City is not like that big land. There's just a lot of people.
Yeah, and I think that's what contributes to a lot of the, like, it's just such a huge population, right? Like, mm-hmm. I feel like, how many people even live in New York City? Millions.
Yeah, definitely. It's one of the, I mean, it's one of the biggest cities in the country, but let's look at that. Ed, NYC. 8.3 million as of 2022.
Yeah. I don't even think 8.3 million people live in my province.
And LA has 3.8. So that's, if that gives you an idea of how many people there just in that little area. It's not mm-hmm. even that, like,
it's a small island. It's not that big. Like,
yeah.
I've never actually stopped in New York City, but I've flown over New York City. It's not big. It's not big.
I've never been there, but I want to go. But anyway, so that was in LA, and then we're going to go to St. Paul Avenue in Milwaukee. In 1961, on August 5th, 1961, so 3 years after the Cooper Donuts brawl, four party-going sailors entered Black Knight, a popular St. Paul Avenue gay bar in Milwaukee, on a dare. They started a fight with the bouncer, only to be chased out of the bar by gender nonconforming Black Queen Josie Carter, who knocked one of the men unconscious with a bottle. Go Queen! The men returned with reinforcements and began to tear the bar apart. Though were met with stiff resistance by bar patrons, the sailors were arrested, but the charges were later dropped due to lack of evidence. The bar suffered significant damage from the brawl and was eventually demolished for the extension of St. Paul Avenue.
Jeez. That's so rude to go into somebody's space and, like,
on a dare and be a problem. Yeah.
Like, I just don't, just fucking, like, leave people alone.
Yeah. I hate that. I mean, it doesn't really surprise me that it was sailors doing that, though, back in the honestly.
You would not. No.
Especially back in those days. So, let's see. The next is Dewey's Restaurant in Sit-In in 1965. On April 25th, 1965, the 17th Street location of Dewey's Restaurant in Philadelphia denied service to approximately 150 people who appeared to be gay or gender nonconforming. Three teenagers refused to leave and were later arrested, along with Clark Polak, leader of the homophile organization Janus Society, where he offered to help the group obtain a lawyer. Janus Society members protested outside of the restaurant for the next 5 days. On May 2nd, three more people staged a second sit-in at Dewey's. This time, the protesters weren't arrested and instead left the restaurant voluntarily a few hours later. Dewey's agreed to stop denying service to LGBTQ+ people. Yeah. So,
worked.
Yeah. So, I forgot that in a lot of this, they do say the word homophile, which I was like, what is that? But it's, I was like, is that like an old term? And it kind of is, but it's relating to gay people or a gay person relating to a movement and collective term for the main organizations and publications supporting and representing sexual minorities in the 1950s and 60s.
Oh, okay.
So it's not a bad thing. I thought it was like, oh, I don't know if I like that.
It's like a weird sounding word. Yeah. It kind of like brings up feelings.
Like, it was like pedophile to me, but I was just like, but it's actually
like an organization.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And also, gender nonconforming is a person whose behavior or appearance does not conform to prevailing cultural and social expectations about what is appropriate for their gender. A person does not have to be transgender to be gender nonconforming. I just wanted to point that out. So,
oh, okay. I feel like that's more and more the case with people.
Oh, yeah. I think the the lines are being blurred a lot. Like you got Jonathan Van Ness, you got Harry Styles, who's and then you got the what's his name from Pose? Do you know who I'm talking about?
Names are hard.
See, his name is, I'm almost there, Billy Porter.
Thank you.
Also, so little side note,
side quest,
there's a thing that, well, there's a bar in, I think, if I told you about this, I told you about this, but I don't know if I said it on the podcast, but, there's a bar in Idaho that's doing like heterosexual month or whatever, heterosexual something. And so they do, they're doing like discounts. Heterosexual night, I think is what it is. And they're, it's over in Meridian area, Boise area. And they give discounts to heterosexual couples, heterosexual people. Like, I'm like, okay.
How do you prove? I don't under.
Okay. So yeah, exactly. How do you prove it? And also, so, I had commented earlier about it, cause I was like, it's whatever. And then, somebody liked my comment, and so it brought me, I don't pay attention to it too much, but then it came up today, this morning, and I was like, the bar had commented and said that they were going to have people checking, like they were going to be like, having people judge on if you're heterosexual or not.
What?
By how you're dressed. And I was like, girl, no. So I commented, I said, I can dress like a straight man. I was like, all I need is a snapback, a football jersey, and cargo shorts. Okay, I can be a straight dude, you know? And then I was like, stop making this about you. Like, why are you making this about you? Pride is not about you. So then I was like, you know what would be great is if we did one of these sit-ins. Again, you know, like, pride is a protest. So, like, go in with all these rainbow and go in, like, looking, like, fabulous. You know, bring queens, bring whatever, and go in and just infiltrate and just, okay, we'll refuse to leave. You know, you're not going to serve us, or you're not going to, okay, we don't need a discount, but we're just going to be here.
Read our books then. That's fine. Yeah. What the fuck? The amount of times my friend and I have, like, been told we're a cute couple because both of us dress like butch lesbians all the time. We're just like, yeah, that's fine. We just go with it. Judging people, oh my god! Sorry, yeah. Flannel's really comfortable.
It's true. Yeah,
I mean, case in point, her and I are both actually bi, so.
But they're, what's ours name?
That's ridiculous. That makes me annoyed. Like, not even mad, just like annoyed with the fact that like that's what the world is acting like. Like.
Oh, it's called Hetero Awesomeness Month.
They couldn't even come up with Hetero Awesomeness. What did a 16-year-old name it?
Yeah, like, can you at least come up with it? It's Hetero Male Monday, free pint for hetero males. Duo deal Wednesday, 15% off for entire bill for hetero couples. Her happy hour Thursday, all day happy hour pricing for hetero ladies.
What and a bunch of bullshit.
Old State Saloon. In my comment too, I said, "This I get it. You guys are probably joking, right? This is probably like some big long joke that you're just actually like making fun." Like,
yeah. And then, I would think it was just as a joke. Yeah.
But no, they've been interviewed by news and it's like national coverage and everything, and they're legit. But I'm just like, okay. And then they get mad when people like are mad at them, and it's like, well, you realize that you're anyway.
Like, you guys are assholes.
Yeah.
Oh my god. I want off this planet.
All right. So, 1966, in spring 1966, members of the early gay rights movement organization Mattachine Society staged a sit-in, a twist on sit-in protest, in which they visited taverns, declared themselves gay, and waited to be turned away so they could sue. At the time, LGBTQ plus individuals couldn't be served alcohol in public because liquor laws considered their gathering to be disorderly.
I mean, I've been to drag brunch. I mean,
they're not wrong, but like, the group was finally denied service at the Greenwich Village Tavern Julius, which had been raided by a police a few days earlier for serving gay people. This led to the quick reversal of the state's anti-gay liquor laws. So I think that's not even that long ago. All this stuff wasn't that long ago. Mm-mm. And like people don't realize that they couldn't even serve gay people, LGBTQ plus people. So yeah. It's like, or they'd get in trouble. And so,
but, so again, how you can't just look at somebody and know their identity.
I do think a lot of this was probably geared towards trans people too. Like there's
yeah, for sure.
If you've watched Pose, there's a whole episode. Is there like a part of one of the seasons where they do sit-ins? Like the one of the characters like demands to be, she's a trans woman and she demands to be served and they won't serve her. And that takes place in the '80s, but
yeah. Oh, I'm sure it's still happening today, unfortunately.
Oh yeah. I mean, if they still have sundown towns that are against black people, there's bound to be bars like Old State Saloon or whatever and that kind of stuff that refuse to serve anything, any whiff of gay.
Any whiff of gay. Don't say the word fabulous.
Let's see. This is from... this is from Wikipedia, but I had ChatGPT summarize it. But the next one is Compton's Cafeteria Riot in 1966. This took place in August 1966 in San Francisco's Tenderloin District. The riot was a direct response to the relentless police harassment of drag queens and trans people, especially trans women. What's incredible is that this riot happened 3 years before the more famous Stonewall riots in New York City, marking one of the first LGBT-related uprisings in U.S. history. The Tenderloin District, historically, is an area where a melting pot of marginalized communities, including working-class people and people of color. In the early 60s, heavy policing and redevelopment in nearby neighborhoods pushed many queer and trans individuals into the Tenderloin. This influx made the district a hub for the LGBTQ plus community, with a growing number of gay bars and social spaces. A lot of trans women and drag queens in the Tenderloin turned to sex work or hustling to survive due to widespread job discrimination. They faced brutal police harassment and abuse from clients. The streets were dangerous and many sex workers were murdered or assaulted. Among those who lived through this was Tamara Ching, a notable sex workers' rights activist. Just real quick, have you been to San Francisco ever?
No, I haven't, unfortunately.
So, I have a friend that lived there for a while. She did like culinary school there, but I went on like this road trip and I ended up in San Francisco, and she told me like, don't go to the Tenderloin. And I was like, I don't know what that is. And, but I found out real quick, but I was walking down this one, like bright, sunny, like beautiful area, and it was like pretty nice, and then all of a sudden it just like changed, like it just like turned into like
really drastic.
Yeah, like one street was nice, the next street was just like just darker, and like there was like this I could just see that the buildings were a little more run down, and I was like, this is weird. And I told my friend where I was, and she's like, oh, turn around, that's the Tenderloin. And I was like, okay, cool. And I didn't go further, but
yeah.
But the Tenderloin is no longer, it's apparently like a more rundown area now. Mm-hmm. And it probably was then still, I don't know. But the gay district is actually the Castro now. Like,
oh, okay.
They've moved it, so.
Yeah. Huh.
But anyway.
I love how like so many cities have like the gayborhoods. It's my favorite thing.
I know.
It's always gorgeous.
Always, right? And then I've always said like, that like the restaurants that are in the gayborhoods are always the best, because the gays are gonna tell it won't last long if you suck, because the gays are gonna let you know. So like Hillcrest in San Diego had the best food and the best bars because the gays would, you know, they'd run you through if you.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Tamara Ching is a trans woman advocate, activist, and former sex worker who has advocated for the transgender, HIV, AIDS, and sex work communities in San Francisco for decades. She was an original member of the Transgender Advisors to the San Francisco Human Rights Commission. She has served as advisor on transgender issues to numerous city political bodies and agencies, including the Board of Supervisors, the San Francisco Police Department, and the Department of Public Health. Ching has also worked in AIDS education outreach, managed a support group for Asian and Pacific Islander trans people, and investigated allegations of discrimination for the Transgender Services Commission. In 2016, Ching received the GLBT Historical Society's History Maker Award at the annual gala. Excuse me. They bestowed the award annually on people and organizations who have had a significant positive impact on the LGBTQ community. Compton's Cafeteria. Make sure. Compton's Cafeteria, owned by Gene Compton, was a popular hangout for the transgender community. It was one of the few places they could meet, especially since many gay bars excluded them. Aww. Which is sad. Like,
it's sad that there was even exclusion within the community too.
Oh yeah, it still happens today.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah,
there's a lot of transphobia within LGBTQ community. Like even now, like they're like, oh, they don't belong with us, you know. What? Especially with all the targeting of trans people, there's like people trying to distance themselves from the trans community, which is disgusting to me.
It makes no sense because it's people who want to be embraced and accepted for who they are, pushing away people who want to be embraced and accepted for who they are.
Exactly. Like, we have the same goal and we have the same. They just don't understand it, I think. They haven't, just like anything with transphobia, people just haven't taken the time to understand it.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I don't understand it very. That doesn't mean I can't just love those people, though.
That's what I was going to say. Like, no, you don't need to understand it fully.
I don't understand how quantum mechanics work, but I can respect that it's something. you know? Like, it's just, I don't know. I don't understand. Do better. That's all I'm saying to everybody. Do better. Dicks.
Let's see. So the management often called the police to harass and arrest trans patrons. Police would arrest them for wearing women's clothing, citing laws against female impersonation.
Okay. What?
Right.
Okay, whatever. I'm just gonna, I just can't. It's fine. Whatever.
Yeah. In 1965, a group called Vanguard, made up of queer and often homeless youth, many of whom were sex workers, formed under the Glide Memorial Church. They were the first known gay youth organization in the U.S. Vanguard members, tired of being harassed and kicked out of Compton's, picketed the cafeteria in July 1966. Though the picket didn't succeed, it set the stage for the riot a month later. On that August 9th in 1966, tensions boiled over when a trans woman threw a cup of coffee in a police officer's face, sparking a full-blown riot. Patrons fought back with anything they could find, from sugar shakers to high heels. The police retreated and the fighting spilled into the streets, with the police car damaged and a newsstand set on fire. The next day, protesters returned to picket Compton's, leading to more smashed windows. The riot marked a pivotal moment in the fight against police brutality and for transgender rights in San Francisco. Compton's Cafeteria eventually closed in 1972, but the legacy of the riot lives on as a crucial chapter in LGBTQ+ activism. It wasn't just a moment of rebellion, it was a catalyst for change, sparking a wave of transgender activism in the heart of San Francisco.
It's crazy how so much change has to be kicked off by, like, violent acts. You know, right? Like, people, I say this to my kids all the time. I'm like, why does nobody listen to me until I start screaming like a crazy person?
Right? Well, you have to make your take up space. You have to make yourself known, and sometimes you have to destroy shit to get noticed. So, there's a, I think I may have talked about this on the podcast before, but I don't know. There's like three states that are basically saying like, they haven't taken away the right to protest, but they've made it very hard to protest. And so they've, I think it's Texas, Louisiana, and Alabama. Usually
Sounds,
the three.
that sounds about right.
But they've made it so that anybody who forms a protest would be liable for any for the damages, right? And
Oh,
so
yeah. You were telling me.
really it's like, okay, so how can you control a protest if you like, hey, say we want to start a peaceful protest and it ends up not being peaceful because it just gets out of hand and then things shit gets damaged. Oh
Yeah.
shit, I've got, it just, are you willing to take that risk and like still do it? And
Yeah, it's a risk you gotta decide. Is it worth it that I might end up like destroying my entire livelihood for this? Or, yeah, it's. I don't like that because the right to
exactly.
protest is like, is a huge. It should be a right to everybody,
Goes
right?
to freedom of speech. And the
Yeah.
I remember, my dad did not have, he had words about that. I was like, well, okay, but still.
Can you see that I'm shocked by that?
Right, I was not, but
Yeah.
anyway, all right, so the Black Cat Tavern protest in LA. So the Black Cat Tavern, which opened in November 1966, was a haven for Silver Lake's queer community who were subjected to harassment from police enforcing anti-homosexuality laws. You see a like trend here where it's like, there's these laws
I just
and
don't
people are just.
understand. I don't understand why what people do in the privacy of their own home is anybody's business, most especially the fucking government. Like, are you
Yeah.
kidding me?
Well, we've got, okay, so this goes into the whole right to privacy because the right to privacy is still relatively new. Like, you couldn't, as a gay person, you couldn't actually even have a person over to have sex with them legally. Like, you had to do it very covertly,
Which is
and you could
so
get your.
dangerous and like so.
Your house could be raided by police by just for this, the just if like your neighbor said, oh, they're having somebody over and they're having sex or whatever. And so, what people don't understand is that that's what the GOP is trying to bring back. They don't, all this stuff that's actually against it started with abortion with Roe v. Wade.
Yep.
It's going to birth control, it's going to contraception. It's the next is, probably interracial marriage. The
Yep.
things that fall under right to privacy are like interracial marriage, gay marriage, all that stuff is under that umbrella. And so once they get rid of right to privacy, all that goes away
It's
and
gone.
we're fucked.
Yeah.
We're back to this
Yeah.
shit that we're talking about today. So
Where
that's
people have to
why.
hide and. Ugh, I hate it so much.
That's why the queer community is so scared of the Supreme Court and the next election. And it's just, oh, there's a lot more riding on it than just, oh, we're going to have a Oompa Loompa in the White House that's doing this
Oompa
instead
Loompa.
of the, or a felon, like he's
Like, ugh. I know everything that happens in the States eventually does affect me up here, but Jesus Christ, you guys.
I know.
Like, oh, can we just like.
They need to calm down. But I think there's some things I hear that kind of are like, oh, that makes, they feel a sense that they're losing power and that's why they're just scrambling for everything they can.
Yeah.
And they're just making our lives miserable while they do it. But at the same time, I'm like, but they're still able to do it because you know what they're
Yeah.
doing is they're putting riders. I was talking to you about this. They put these riders into these bills where there's this bigger bill that like is bipartisan and it allows for people to like, they're like, oh, we support that. Mm-hmm. And so of course we're going to, if they didn't read it or if they don't care, they're like, well, we'll compromise with that. And those writers mm-hmm. don't really matter. The writers go through and those are the ones that are dangerous.
That's why you have to be so careful because, and that's why there's so much wordage in these things because it gets lost in the language, like the legalese language.
Yeah.
It gets lost in it, what the actual meanings of things are, and people don't read through them and they don't really understand like what is actually in them.
They push through these like 150 to 200 page documents.
Yeah.
Who's going to read that? And they have to, they have a deadline, get it done by the midnight. Who's going to mm-hmm. read that?
Nobody, because it's impossible, because there's five or six of them happening, you know, like, I read really fast and like 500 pages, it still takes me a few days.
Right.
And that's if it's captivating.
Yeah.
Legalese language is not captivating. Law school books? You ever read a law school book? They're not great.
Yeah. All right. So on New Year's Eve, 1967, undercover cops tore apart couples celebrating at midnight and began beating them. So that's lovely. The brutality eventually spread to a neighboring bar where police attacked the bar's owner and two bartenders. By the end of the night, 14 people were arrested and two of the men were later forced to register as sex offenders for kissing. Yeah. So let's destroy their lives just for kissing each other and for having a good old time. This isn't a spoiler, but it's like if you've watched, listeners, X-Men is my jam. I love them. X-Men 97 is incredible. There's a whole episode where there's Genosha, which is the mutants' island where they get to – it's kind of a haven mm-hmm. for them. They get to be whoever they want to be, and if you can see the correlation, pretty obviously. They get to be who they want to be. They, in this episode, they have this nice gala, and everything is beautiful, and they're just – enjoying themselves, showing off their powers, doing great things, dancing, and it gets attacked. And it's brutal, and some of the best characters end up dying. I won't tell who, but there's and it's devastating to watch. But the writer said it was based on like Pulse nightclub shooting, on all these things that we're talking about now, where people were just trying, they were just dancing, they were just trying to have a good time, and
living
they got
yeah.
murdered for it, or their lives were, or they got arrested, they got treated like criminals for it. So
I hate it so much.
Yeah. On February 11th, 1967, over 200 demonstrators formed a picket line outside of the Black Cat Tavern to peacefully protest against police abuse. Though many police were dispatched to the protest, it remained charged but peaceful.
Oh, I thought it did. Oh, charged. That's an understatement, I feel like.
Yeah, it's more just probably about the vibe. It was just like when I went to Rexburg Pride last year. There was
that was really charged.
There's
yeah.
a vibe. Yeah,
yeah.
Like it could explode at any minute. And we were just like, this is fun. I went to support, but I was like very on my guard the whole time. So that's exactly it.
That's how I feel anytime I participate in anything here, unfortunately, because unfortunately Alberta is like the freaking redneckville of Canada. But yeah, there's so many asshole conservatives in this area that think that it's their right to be violent and aggressive to people just like living their lives, you know. Like we now have, there's a grant for security to be procured for any pride demonstrations that are happening this month from different places because it's necessary. Like it's necessary to have security.
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck is going on?
So at Rexburg Pride, they had private security and the cops were there. So both were present there. So
yeah. Unbelievable to me. Like,
yeah, it's interesting because it's good to have the cops there, but like, mm-hmm. because there's a history with cops, it's hard. There's like this, like...
it's a mixed feeling, right? Because
yeah.
they're supposed to be there to keep everyone safe. But like that cop's personal feelings, are those going to come into play? And are we going to actually be kept safe? Or are we going to be, you know, like it's hard to... It's hard. It's... Yeah, it's an icky feeling to not know if you're actually safe or not.
Right. Exactly. And if they're when stuff did, like the drag queen showed up at Rexburg Pride last year and she wasn't supposed to. And the picketers were the protesters came and then they swarmed her, but then the protesters got swarmed by people at Pride and it could have escalated, but
very easily.
And the cops came with their like riot gear and everything, and it was like, oh, okay.
Yeah. So. That's
but I don't... they said that after we talked to one of them after, and they said we were actually protecting the Pride, the people from Pride, like we didn't want that to escalate. We wanted it to, you know, that was the best way we could. We were actually more worried about what the protesters were going to do.
Well, yeah, because again, they think they have this right to be assholes. Like, they just think they have just this right to just treat people like shit. Yeah. And I don't know where that comes from.
I don't either.
You know, like, I don't know. My little boy was in school and another little boy forced someone to kiss him.
Oh, yeah.
And I know the parents of that child who forced someone to kiss my son are very, like, conservative. They are very, and I'm like, so this is where it starts. Your little boy is forcing something to happen so that he can then beat up on my little boy? That's cute. He started the situation. My little boy defended, and now your little boy got punched in the nose, but it's my little boy's fault.
Yeah.
Okay. They are children. Yeah. It enrages me with the brainwashing that's going on in these families of pick on kids that are different than you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyways.
Oh, and it is brainwashing. They say that it's the...
We're trying to make our kids gay. We're trying to make your kids gay. No, we just want kids to live. We just want kids to survive and not die. That's all we want. We just want our kids to go to school and be safe and learn in a safe environment and not have to worry about who is going to touch their body or do something to them, you know? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, it's... on that note, side quest, there was a trans girl that was brutally attacked. She went into the boys' bathroom because she's biological.
They told her she was a boy, right?
Yeah. So she was doing what she was told to do. Mm-hmm. And then some of her peers, a boy peered over the stall, looking into the stall, and was mocking her and making comments. And then as she was leaving, she got punched in the jaw and broke her jaw, just like did all sorts of incredible damage to her. It's brutally attacked her. And yet trans people are the problem, right?
Yeah.
Right? That's what I don't understand. I'm like,
and she was doing what she was told to do. You were assigned boy. So she went to the boys because that's what she was told to do. And then she's still like these fuckers who stay out of my bathroom. Well, then you stay out of the fucking bathroom. You know how many times I've been attacked by a trans woman in a bathroom? Zero. You know how many times I've been attacked by a biologically born man in the middle of the street in broad daylight? Like,
yeah.
Oh, I could just scream about it.
Mm-hmm. It is enraging, and I don't like. They're using trans people as a pawn, and I get that it's political, but they don't realize that there are actual human lives being affected by this. There are actual people behind their little games that they're playing and they don't care. That's the shit that.
They do not give a shit because
they're willing to spread their propaganda, their discrimination, their hate, and in just for their political gain, not realizing that the damage that they're doing to actual children's lives, not just children, but there's also adult trans people that are feeling the effects of this. Like,
oh, for sure, yeah.
It's disgusting. Like,
And, like, be really careful who you hate, because you don't know how your child is going to identify later on with life.
Exactly. Often I'll say, like, oh, if I see, like, a bigot person, there's, I'm just going to say her name, April Despain, the little bitch in Utah that has, like, the family proclamation.
Oh, yeah. I was like, why do I know that name?
I had several arguments with her last year.
I remember, I know, yeah.
And just online and whatever, and she's a terrible human that thinks that that's, like, some big movement or whatever. And also, I'm just like, okay, outside of Utah and Idaho, who's going to know what the fuck that says, you know? Like, who cares? Anyway,
seriously.
There's been comments of, like, well, what if one of your kids turns out to be gay or whatever? And she's like, I would still love them. And I was like, really?
No, you wouldn't. No, you wouldn't.
You would kick them onto the streets. So you're
absolutely.
Just... Or you'd send them to conversion therapy, because that's apparently what you guys do. Anyway.
Or they would never be gay because she doesn't believe in it. So.
Oh, yeah. She calls it the gay religion. She it's a religion. Anyway, enough about that bitch. But, all right. So. God, she's annoying. So annoying.
Oh, amen. Amen, brother. My brother and Lady Gaga.
She has been up to her same shit this year, but not as much. Right. And I'm like, it's not getting near as much attention as it did last year. And I'm like, oh
poor thing. Poor princess. Nobody pay attention to your stupidness. That's too bad.
Yeah.
Except for you.
The only thing I have seen is that there's more people that are doing it, following suit, that there's, like, putting the family proclamation up, and I'm like, okay, cool. Put up your little flag. Do you put that up all year round? Like, I put my gay flag up? No.
My gay flag. That just tickled me for some reason.
Well, if you can't laugh, you gotta cry. You're gonna cry. So.
I know. A good friend of mine, she works in a dentist office, and every day that she works for Pride, she wears the colors of all the different rainbows, and I love her so much. Like, yesterday she was the lesbian flag.
Oh,
so she matches her scrub tops to match, and it's I love it so much. I just, every day I'm just, like, so excited to see what she's wearing. And she works in a very conservative office, and she just walks in there with her little flag self, and I'm so proud. Makes me so happy. I'm like, yes, girl. Yes.
That's amazing.
Just her little rebellion of, like, I'm an ally and you can't stop me because I'm still wearing scrubs.
Yeah, that's right.
They're just certain colors today.
All right. So the next one is the Patch Bar. The Patch was an LGBTQ+ bar in Wilmington, in LA. I had to write that down because I thought it was a Wilmington, Delaware or whatever. Isn't there, like, a... Anyway. But I was like, who's in Delaware? Although, fun fact, Delaware is one of the, like, safest places for gay people right now.
Really?
Yeah.
Because nobody lives there.
Well, it's tiny. And who thinks of going to Delaware?
I always forget that Delaware is, like, a real place.
Me too. I'm like, I don't think it exists. I think it's real.
Because people talk about Delaware, and I'm like, what? Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
Well, it's like on Wayne's World when they're doing that little thing, and they're like, hi, I'm in Delaware. All right.
Oh,
so
God, it
was owned and managed by Lee Glaze. Glaze had a secret signal. He'd play God Save the Queen on the jukebox to announce that police officers were entering the bar, allowing patrons time to comply with the discriminatory laws.
Wow.
Yeah. On August 17th, 1968, undercover cops left the bar and returned with several uniformed officers for backup, though it's unclear what prompted this action. They fanned out and began to screen the crowd looking for IDs that didn't match the holder's outward appearance. So they were essentially looking for trans people. In the end, police arrested two bar patrons for lewd conduct, enraging Glaze, who knew the men were innocent. He led a crowd to buy massive quantities of flowers from a nearby shop owned by one of the bar's customers. The crowd then went to the police station and camped in the waiting room, remaining until bail was posted for the arrested men. All right, and that leads us to Stonewall. So,
where every night's a riot.
The 1960s and preceding decades were not welcoming times for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender Americans. For instance, solicitation of same-sex relations was illegal in New York City. For such reasons, LGBT individuals flocked to gay bars and clubs, places of refuge where they could express themselves openly and socialize without worry. However, the New York State Liquor Authority penalized and shut down establishments that served alcohol to known or suspected LGBT individuals, arguing that the mere gathering of homosexuals was disorderly.
Okay.
Yeah. Thanks to activist efforts, these regulations were overturned in 1966, and LGBT patrons could then be served alcohol. But engaging in gay behavior in public, holding hands, kissing, or dancing with someone of the same sex was still illegal, so police harassment of gay bars continued, and many bars still operated without liquor licenses, in part because they were owned by the mafia. Oh, it's legit. So Stonewall itself was actually like kind of a hole in the wall. Like it was I remember listening to a podcast where they described it, and it was like literally the toilets never worked. Like it was just.
Yeah, I've seen pictures, and I'm like, that's. Yeah. Wow, okay.
Well, it's owned by the mafia, and the mafia didn't worry about upkeep. They wanted the money. They didn't care. And they liked having the control over the gay people and being able to it was all nefarious. It was all underhanded. And
because who's going to say anything? Because they're illegal just being there. Yeah.
Exactly. It's a vulnerable people that they were preying on to allow them to have that space. Yes, that's great, but like in really terrible conditions.
Yeah, it wasn't out of the goodness of their hearts. Yeah.
Right. The first documented U.S. gay rights organization, the Society for Human Rights, SHR, was founded in 1924 by Henry Gerber, a German immigrant. Police raids forced them to disband in 1925, but not before they had published several issues of their newsletter, Friendship and Freedom, the country's first gay interest newsletter. America's first lesbian rights organization, the Daughters of Bilitis, was formed in San Francisco on September 21st, 1955. In 1966, 3 years before Stonewall, members of the Mattachine Society, an organization dedicated to gay rights, staged a sip-in where they declared their sexuality at taverns, daring staff to turn them away. When the Commission on Human Rights ruled the gay individuals had the right to be served in bars, police raids were temporarily reduced. The crime syndicate saw profit in catering to shunned gay clientele, and by the mid-1960s, the Genovese crime family controlled most Greenwich Village gay bars. In 1966, they purchased Stonewall Inn, a straight bar and restaurant, cheaply renovated it, and reopened it the next year as a gay bar. Stonewall Inn was registered as a type of private bottle bar, which did not require a liquor license because patrons were supposed to bring their own liquor.
That's clever.
Yeah. Little loophole. Club attendees had to sign their names on a book upon entry to maintain the club's false exclusivity. The Genovese family bribed New York's 6th Police Precinct to ignore the activities occurring within the club. Without police interference, the crime family could cut costs how they saw fit. The club lacked a fire exit, running water behind the bar to wash glasses, clean toilets that didn't routinely overflow, and palatable drinks that weren't watered down beyond recognition.
I've been to a bar like that.
Yeah, we all have.
Having like flashbacks, and I can smell Crown Royal. Just
Yep. Mm-hmm. The mafia also reportedly blackmailed the club's wealthier patrons who wanted to keep their sexuality a secret. So it wasn't a good. I mean,
lovely, just yes, delightful.
I mean, yes, the mafia was like helping them, but also at the same, they were also blackmailing them. So I don't know.
I mean, they took advantage of a situation.
Double-edged sword. Yeah. Stonewall Inn became an important Greenwich Village institution. It was large and relatively cheap to enter. It welcomed drag queens who received a bitter reception at other gay bars and clubs, which is interesting to me because like drag queens are so amazing, but they're and drag is way more celebrated now than
even when we were kids, it was like,
oh yeah,
yeah.
Well, remember to Wong Fu with Love from what am I, oh my god, oh don't revoke my gay card, it's to Wong Fu with Love.
I mean, you haven't watched Shut Up Gossip Girl, so
ew. To Wong Fu, thanks for everything. That's what it is.
There you go.
Ugh, Gossip Girl. I've been to Gossip Grill in San Diego.
Did you just ew Gossip Girl?
No. Did I?
You did. You said ew. Well, listeners, it's been a great ride. I thank you for all of the love you've given, but I'm out.
Let's see. So, but even then, that movie, like, it came out in the, what, 90s, and it was, like, a huge, like, scandal that Patrick Swayze in drag, Wesley Snipes in drag, whatever, like, anyway.
Even Romeo and Juliet with Leonardo DiCaprio and Claire Danes, when Mercutio?
Yeah.
Walks in in drag.
Yeah, yeah.
Even that was like, ah! Like, I remember,
but little
my
do they
like,
know that Shakespeare, all when he was playing, like, all his men, all his, the women characters,
yeah, women
played by boys.
Yeah, women couldn't be on stage.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. Also, everything is drag. We are all, drag is just an expression of sexuality, of like, of it's art, for one, but it's also just an expression, and everybody expresses themselves differently, and that's just another form of it. So
I see it the same as taking my children to a ballet. It's an art form.
And
drag
if,
is an art form.
And if I'm like, if I were to go to that bar dressed like a straight man, that would be drag. You know, like
that's a good point. You'd be a drag king. Oh my goodness! You can go get your free drink or whatever.
Not worth it, but
apples.
I would totally do it as a group. Like if I could get
a
group together, we're all just like wearing our rainbow and being gay and whatever. Just we don't even have to like kiss or like hold hands or whatever. Just like
just existing. Walk in.
Just walk in and be like, oh, you know. Oh, you don't want to tip. All right, that's good. Fine. You don't.
Yeah, I'd be like, oh, sorry, I don't tip heterosexual server.
Yeah, exactly.
That's my belief.
Yeah, yep. It wasn't, so Stonewall was a nightly home for many runaways and homeless gay youths who panhandled or shoplifted to afford the entry fee. And it was one of the few, if not only, gay bars left that allow dancing, which is weird to think about now. Raids were still a fact of life, but usually corrupt cops would tip off mafia-run bars before they occurred, allowing owners to stash the alcohol sold without a liquor license and hide other illegal activities. In fact, the NYPD had stormed Stonewall Inn just a few days before the riot-inducing raid. Okay. So the Stonewall riots, when police raided Stonewall Inn on the morning of June 28th, it came as a surprise. The bar wasn't tipped off this time. Armed with a warrant, police officers entered the club, roughed up patrons, and finding bootlegged alcohol, arrested 13 people, including employees and people violating the state's gender-appropriate clothing statute. Female officers would take suspected cross-dressing patrons into the bathroom to check their sex. Disgusting.
I was on mute, but the gasp I just let out, I just terrified my dog. That's...
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Fed up with constant police harassment and social discrimination, angry patrons and neighborhood residents hung around outside the bar rather than disperse, becoming increasingly agitated as the events unfolded and people were aggressively manhandled. At one point, an officer hit a lesbian over the head as he forced her into the police van. She shouted to onlookers to act, inciting the crowd to begin throwing pennies, bottles, cobblestones, and other objects to the police. Within minutes, a full-blown riot involving hundreds of people began. The police, a few prisoners, and a village voice rider barricaded themselves in the bar, which the mob attempted to set on fire after breaching the barricade repeatedly. The fire department and a riot squad were eventually able to douse the flames, rescue those inside Stonewall, and disperse the crowd. But the protests, sometimes involving thousands of people, continued in the area for 5 more days, flaring up at one point after the village voice had published its account of the riots. So, real quick, we have to talk about Marsha P. Johnson because she was she gets attributed for being like one of the, she wasn't
the first
actually
ones to throw something.
Yeah, to throw a brick, but I think it's since been kind of, we've discovered that she wasn't there for a lot of it, but
yeah,
you know.
But I think because her death was never really resolved. Oh, spoiler alert!
We're gonna get into it.
Yeah,
we're gonna get into it, Dusty. So, it doesn't diminish the fact that she was like a huge, huge part of this movement. So. Marsha P. Johnson was born Malcolm Michaels Jr. on August 24th, 1945, in Elizabeth, New Jersey. Growing up in a working-class family, her father labored at General Motors while her mother kept the household running. Despite her traditional upbringing, Marsha's spirit was anything but ordinary. She started wearing dresses at just 5 years old, though societal pressures made her pause this self-expression for a time. She mentioned it, like, in the 1950s, like, anyway. Yeah. In a poignant recollection, Marsha described a traumatic incident from her youth, a sexual assault by an older boy. This event, coupled with a harsh dismissal of homosexuality by her mother, led Marsha to suppress her true self until she was 17. With dreams and just $15 in her pocket, she left for New York City after high school, stepping into a world that would eventually recognize her as a symbol of resilience and pride. Upon arriving in Greenwich Village in 1966, Marsha began waitressing and mingling with street hustlers. It was here that she embraced her identity, declaring her life dedicated to gay liberation, drag, and sex work. Her chosen name, Marsha P. Johnson, came from Howard Johnson's restaurant, and the P famously stood for Pay It No Mind, a phrase she used to brush off questions about her gender. Marsha's identity was fluid. She described herself as gay, a transvestite, and a drag queen. We don't use the term transvestite anymore, this is from, I don't know
where. That was how she self-described, though, yeah. In the time, right?
Exactly. Though today's terms like transgender was not in common use, Marsha's expression of gender was certainly non-conforming and ahead of her time. She became a fixture in the local drag scene, known for her eclectic style, often seen in crowns of fresh flowers, flowing robes, and bright wigs. Her activism took root after the historic Stonewall Uprising in 1969. While she didn't claim to have started the riots, her presence and actions during and after the event were crucial in shaping the movement. Marsha co-founded the Street Transvestite Action Revolutionaries, STAR, with Sylvia Rivera, creating a safe haven for homeless, gay, and trans youth. STAR House became a cornerstone of support, offering food, shelter, and a sense of family to those in need.
Incredible.
Yeah. Throughout the 70s and beyond, Marsha's activism didn't wane. She joined various LGBTQ+ groups, participated in protests, and even took on roles in drag performance troupes like Hot Peaches and the Angels of Light. Hot Peaches, I love it. Her life was a blend of activism and artistry. Her performances often infused with political and social commentary. Despite her many struggles, including numerous arrests and mental health challenges, Martha's spirit remained unbroken. She was a caregiver, a fierce advocate for AIDS awareness, and a beloved figure in her community. Tragically, Marsha's life was cut short in 1992 when her body was found in the Hudson River under suspicious circumstances. While her death was initially ruled a suicide, many believe foul play was involved, a testament to the dangers she faced even in her final days. Marsha P. Johnson's legacy lives on, a testament to her courage and an indomitable spirit. She remains a symbol of the ongoing fight for equality and the power of living one's truth. So there's a little bit of insight into who Marsha P. Johnson was. You can't talk about Stonewall without talking about Marsha
P. Johnson. No, she's synonymous with Stonewall, basically.
Yeah. And not just Stonewall, but like obviously the beginning. I think the Stonewall is like the catalyst of what led her to become such an icon.
I think anything on that grand of a scale would force you to, okay, now it's time to start screaming about these things, right?
Absolutely. So though the Stonewall Uprising didn't start the gay rights movement, it was a galvanizing force for LGBT political activism, leading to numerous gay rights organizations, including the Gay Liberation Front, Human Rights Campaign, which is still around, GLAAD, formerly Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, and PFLAG, formerly Parents, Families, and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. PFLAG is now, I think, they're the ones that do, I mean, PFLAG, but they do a lot of stuff with the military now.
Mm-hmm. So. And I remember GLAAD being a thing, too, yeah.
I think they're still around, but I don't know what they're, anyway. Yeah. I think the most popular one now still is Human Rights Campaign.
Mm-hmm.
They're the, yeah. On the one-year anniversary of the riots on June 28, 1970, thousands of people marched in the streets of Manhattan from the Stonewall into Central Park in what was then called Christopher Street Liberation Day, America's first gay pride parade. The parade's official chant was, "Say it loud, gay is proud." In 2016, then-President Barack Obama designated the site of the riot, Stonewall Inn, Christopher Park, and the surrounding streets and sidewalks a national monument in recognition of the area's contribution to gay rights.
Incredible.
Yeah. What was it? I miss Obama, honestly. Somebody, like a leader that actually, like, took time to understand and, like, took time to push through gay marriage and to like do those
somebody who is actually has like such a wealth of knowledge because he worked with the people for years before he became a politician. Like, I'm sorry, reality TV star is never going to be the same as someone who, you know.
All right, so now we're going to go to Canada. in Operation Soap, Toronto, Canada. And actually,
I love how there was like Toronto, Canada, Vancouver, Canada. It's like there's a province in there too.
Oh, I don't have no idea. I don't know.
Oh, Ontario. Toronto's in Ontario. Oh,
okay.
But that's just how they, like, when they say something on the news, like, Regina, Canada. It's just that one. They never say the province. It's just funny to me.
All right. Operation Soap was a raid, and I didn't know about this until you told me about it. So then looking into it, I was like, oh, interesting. All right. Operation Soap was a raid by the Metropolitan Toronto Police against four gay bathhouses in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. There it is. Which took place in February 5th, 1981. Nearly 300 men were arrested, the largest mass arrest in Canada since the 1970 October crisis, before the record was broken during the 2006 Stanley Cup playoffs in Edmonton, Alberta.
We don't need to talk about that.
Although many gay bathhouses had previously been raided in Canada and other smaller raids followed, Operation Soap is considered a special turning point in the history of the LGBT community in Canada. The raids and their aftermath are today widely considered to be the Canadian equivalent of the 1969 Stonewall riots in New York City. Mass protests and rallies were held denouncing the incident. These evolved into Toronto's current Pride Week, which is now one of the world's largest gay pride festivals and celebrated its 35th anniversary in 2015, so whatever, this is old, but all right. Most charges connected to the incident were eventually dropped or discharged, although some bathhouse owners were fined $40,000. Canada's Body House Law, B-A-W-D-Y, not body, like B-O-D-Y. Canada's Body House Law, under which the charges in this raid were laid, remained in effect until it was repealed in 2019, which was only rarely applied against gay establishments after the trials connected to the 1981's raids ended. At the time, it was widely believed that the raids were approved by Attorney General of Ontario Roy McMurtry and the provincial government. In a 2007 interview, however, McMurtry said that this was not the case. The irony of the whole thing was that I had expressed my concern to the chief of police that it really looked like we were dissolving into a police state. The whole thing looked terrible. Without a doubt, that was one of my most frustrating experiences. McMurtry subsequently served as Chief Justice of Ontario and wrote the 2003 decision of Ontario's Court of Appeal in favor of same-sex marriage. Also, I will point out that favor was spelled your way with a U, so welcome. Journalist Matthew Hayes has criticized the media's frequent labeling of the Toronto raids as being Canada's Stonewall. According to Hayes, that distinction should be extended to the 1977 Mystique and Trucks bathhouse raids in Montreal, which led within just a few months to Quebec becoming the first government in Canada to pass a law banning discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation.
One of the only good things Quebec has done. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
So have you heard of the Montreal raids in 1977?
I think I've heard about them, but I don't know a lot about them.
And I found that out. So when I read about the Operation Bathhouse, Operation Soap, oh my God, they said that, oh, well, there was actually another one before this. So just like with Stonewall.
Yeah, there was one before.
The big ones, but there's like, anyway.
I think it's because it was the biggest one is why we know about it. Yeah.
Which is exactly why it's Stonewall. It's the
exactly.
Same.
Yeah.
So Mystique and Truck's Montreal raids of 1977. This is from The Walrus, which is probably the most Canadian thing I've heard in a while. So it's some.
We're adorable. What can I say?
You probably have a lesbian magazine called The Beaver or something, but
we have an energy drink called Beaver Buzz, which sounds inappropriate.
I went to a brewery in Colorado that had like beaver jokes everywhere, and it was all the drinks were like beaver or something, and I was like, oh, this is very uncomfortable for a gay man, but it's fine. I'll roll with it because it's funny. But there's also in Rexburg, there's the Beaver Dick Park, which and it's named after some guy. Like he was a trapper.
Wow. A trapper named Beaver Dick?
Well, his name is Richard.
Of course Dick. It was. And
they called him Beaver Dick because he was like I don't know. I might be getting stuff wrong with that, but we went there for a family reunion and we like read all the history of it, and I was like, I had no idea about this, but I was like, I thought it was just weird that they called it Beaver Dick, and I was like, why would they do that? Change the name. I get it that it's about some guy, but like give it his, like call it his name. Not Beaver
yeah
Dick.
Like Richard's Park is way better than Beaver Dick.
Anyway, all right, so from The Walrus, it's not a surprise that members of Canada's LGBTQ communities cheered last week in 2019, so years ago, when Toronto's police chief offered an official apology for the raids. Queer groups have had a long straight history with the police. This felt like another indication that we headed in the right direction. But a funny thing happened on the way to correcting a nasty bit of civil rights history. The reporting itself was profoundly wrong. On the National, the CBC reporter declared that night is the one that sparked Canada's gay rights movement. Their website went on to quote an activist as saying it was our Stonewall. They're talking about the bathhouse Operation Soap. The CTV report basically repeated the same line. This was the first time such raids had galvanized a community in Canada and led to action. Not so. On October 22nd, 1977, police raided two downtown Montreal gay establishments, Truck's Bar and Le Mystique, arresting 146 in what would be the largest mass arrest since Trudeau had declared the War Measures Act during the October crisis. The police were armed, with at least two of them carrying machine guns. Jesus. The men faced compulsory VD tests and also faced charges, most of which would be dropped later on or dismissed in court. The next day, approximately 2,000 protested the raids in downtown Montreal, which culminated in further clashes with police and a few arrests. But unlike the Toronto raid of a few years later, the raids and the ensuing protests against them led to direct political action. Queer activists lobbied the PQ government for actual changes to the law, and they arrived. On December 15th of that year, Quebec's National Assembly would amend the Quebec Human Rights Charter to include sexual orientation as a prohibited form of discrimination. That made Quebec the first province in Canada and the largest jurisdiction in North America to ever provide such protection under the law. It may just seem like a minor oversight, but it's not. In a community with a history as fragile as ours, it's imperative their stories be told correctly and respectfully. The Montreal raids and subsequent change to the law were not minor, nor are they part of some hidden undertold history, and the raids led directly to pride marchers in Montreal. The first ones did not take place in Toronto, as media also erroneously reported last week. And the changes in Quebec's provincial charters predated the subsequent provincial government changes by many years. This is all part of the historical record, and a Google search away, I realize media organizations have weathered seemingly endless rounds of cuts, but reporting on the Toronto bathhouse raids of 81 as precedent setting is sheer laziness. Jeez, tell us how you really feel. And it stings all the worse when one considers that many of the offending quotes came from the activists who know how sensitive issues surrounding historical accuracy are and how much of our history simply doesn't exist because it has been ignored or downplayed. Canadian Lesbian and Gay Archives, CLGA, is a vital organization, but its very commitment to historical accuracy is threatened by when its own president, Dennis Findlay, tells the CBC that the 81 raids were a game changer for many individuals within the community to realize, no, we're not taking the shit anymore. I'm sure they were a game changer, but they weren't the first of their kind. It's pretty stunning that no one thought to say anything or make sure the journalists got their story right. It isn't that the men who were arrested in Toronto didn't suffer something traumatic or demeaning, nor the women who in 2000 would be arrested and searched in the notorious Pussy Palace raid, also in Toronto. But the memories of the men arrested in Montreal in 1977 should not be obscured or eclipsed by something that happened in Toronto some 4 years later. That's basically... So let the record stand that the Toronto raids have set a vital precedent. It's that they have led to an actual apology. Though there is one thing that the Montreal and Toronto raids share in common, official apologies for both are long overdue. So I was going to go into Don't Ask, Don't Tell after this, but I think we don't need to.
It's a lot.
That could be a whole other episode. So anyway, I just thought it was important to discuss. I think, especially now, more I get really frustrated with Pride, especially this year. I have very mixed feelings because, yes, it's a celebration. It's great. It's beautiful. A celebration of love. And that's what it has been. That's what it's kind of turned into. It's very corporate now. It's very much just like rainbows everywhere. And I think part of me understands why people get irritated with it, because it's like, oh, it's in your face and it's just people dancing and it's just fun, you know. But also, you hate us because you ain't us, you know, like that kind of thing. But also, looking at the history of Pride as a protest, like, we see all these things, this writing on the wall of, like, what I was talking about, like, we were talking about earlier about the right to privacy going away, that kind of stuff. That's actually in danger. Like, we need to actually start regulating now and realizing that. And I think we've done, like, Gen Z doesn't know a life without gay rights. They don't know a life where you had to be in the closet all the time.
Yeah.
And that's great. It's wonderful that we've been able to establish that there's, you know, a history of, you know, this is what these people fought for. They fought to have a generation where they didn't have to worry about this. But it's still in danger, you know, like there's still.
Yeah, like they don't understand that some people gave their lives so that they could live the way they are today. And they don't realize how close it is to being ripped away from them.
Yeah. And I worry that, like, if we're focusing so much on, like, the love is love, which is a great message. Beautiful.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I'm not saying we can't have that, but I think we also need to have recognition that we just need to be ready to fight if it comes down to it.
Yeah, the hateful messages and the fact that security was needed at a family dance this week, and the fact that today is Pride Fest, and knowing, like, in my town it's Pride Fest today, and knowing that, like, I have to be on alert taking my children later today, that's why we have to have Pride, because those fears are still existing.
Well, and the was it the release? They did it last year too. The organizations have said, like, Pride is, like, being targeted by extreme groups, you know. So just last year in North Idaho, which was not surprising, that group of those people that were in the U-Haul truck that had guns and stuff, and they were uncovered, you know. People are like, oh, it was staged. I'm like, I don't care if it was staged. It was still just like, why did they bring guns to the party? You know, like they were meaning to use them. So that's just, I'm glad they were caught before it became a thing. And I'm glad so far there has not been any huge catastrophes or, you know, tragedies in Pride yet. But I feel like it's just like a matter of time, though, you know. It just feels like a ticking time bomb of, like, and I'm not trying to fear monger or try to, like, get people stressed out, but I also just think that And this episode's going to come out at the end of Pride Month, hopefully, you know. But there's still a lot of Pride mm-hmm. celebrations throughout the year, throughout the summer. Yeah. They go through until October, you know. So mm-hmm. it's still going to be around the world happening, you know. It's not just – also, June is – yes, it's Pride Month, but Pride is all year long. Like, I keep my flag up all year. And honestly, even if I didn't, I'm still gay. Like, I still – it's me. It's who I am. I don't fucking care. I'm not going to hide who I am. And just be proud during June. Like, I'm going
to
be...
Well, and you had to hide who you were for over two decades. So, yeah. No more hiding. Yeah.
Exactly. And I have been, like, I don't know. I'm guilty of, like, watering myself down a little bit after moving to Idaho because... But it's, like, code switching, you know? You have to, like, see how where you're safe, you know? So, it's not always safe to be out and proud, but, like... You know, you just pick your battles, but
yeah, unfortunately, yeah, you have to make sure that you are taking care of yourself and that you're not putting yourself into a dangerous situation, which really sucks.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's the history of Pride. See, that wasn't too bad. You got a little enraged for a little bit, but you know.
I know. I just, you know, I'm always enraged. It's just my resting state. No, but it. I wish there wasn't a need for Pride in the sense that I wish everyone could just fucking mind their own business and just love everybody regardless. Mm-hmm. But I understand why it is necessary. And it makes me
gonna be, we're going to be raising our flag every Pride month for until we have the no need for it. You know, mm-hmm. there's, I don't know.
I will just never get over fucking bigots who are so obsessed with other people's preferences. It never fails to astound me.
Yeah, and the amount of the Christians on social media that are just like, oh, beware of Pride Month. Oh, Pride is a sin, and Pride is one of the seven deadly sins, and it's one of the and the rainbow is Noah's thing and whatever.
And you're like, okay, calm down.
Stop your obsession is. It's cute, you know, it's cute, but like,
why are you so obsessed with me?
Yeah, exactly. And I like to point that out to them and they don't like that. I'm like, well, you're literally posting more about Pride than I do. So get the fuck out of here. If you're, anyway.
Yeah, it's true.
All right.
Well, thanks for all the research. That was very interesting and insightful. And
yeah, I think it's, I'd listened to a podcast episode about how Stonewall wasn't the first thing. And I think it's important to keep pointing that out, that like mm-hmm. small movements led to the big one, the loud.
Yeah. That's the one that, it was the bomb at the end of a very long.
Yeah. It was a long journey. Yeah. And even before what we do know, I'm sure there were other ones that just.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. History. That's the thing. Queer people have always existed in history. Mm-hmm. It's just, we didn't, it was in such a hidden way, you know.
Yeah,
he had a lovely scarf collection and lived with his best friend for many years, like, you know.
Or the
sister, the wife,
that
was a lovely gathering.
Yeah, she lived in her cabin in the plains of Kansas with her best friend,
her dear Martha. Friend. Yeah. They both lost their husbands at a young age and found companionship with each other. Yeah, like,
we,
there was only one room in that cabin.
Well, we talked about that one that was, that woman that was the pioneer, the Relief Society.
Yeah, the Relief Society woman that started the friend. Yeah.
Yeah, that was definitely.
Her best friend.
Yeah, with her best friend. Anyway. Yeah.
They've always existed.
Yeah, exactly. We're here, we're queer. Grab me a beer.
Grab me a beer.
I don't know.
Leave me alone and let me live my life the way I see fit.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll thank you a very much.
Happy Pride.